Imagine holding your phone to your ear and hearing your own voice, like your exact pitch, your exact pacing, your unique cadence, but it's speaking completely fluent Mandarin in real time. Or, you know, imagine an AI system so incredibly capable that its creators literally had to build a secondary, slightly less intelligent AI just to act as a bouncer, basically to stop you from asking it the wrong questions. It is Wednesday, June 10th, 2026, and, well, if you were completely unplugged last night, you missed an absolute technological earthquake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was an unprecedented 24 hours in the tech sector. We are seeing these massive, really foundational shifts in how systems process information, and the crazy thing is it's happening simultaneously across, what, a half dozen industries.
Yeah, easily. We have a massive stack of source material from last night's news cycle to get through, like, six major drops covering AI safety, a deeply philosophical corporate war, mobile tech infrastructure, global language translation, decentralized finance, and the revival of some absolute gaming legends. So our mission for this deep dive is to cut through the press release hype, connect all these disparate dots, and show you exactly how your digital landscape is being permanently rewired. Okay, let's unpack this. We have to start with Anthropic's Shock Drop Claude, Fable 5.
Right, which totally caught the entire industry off guard. I mean, this is the first publicly available Mythos class model. Up until literally yesterday, Anthropic had strictly maintained they wouldn't release any Mythos model to the public, right? Because the internal red teaming showed the capabilities were simply too dangerous.
Too dangerous in terms of, like, what?
Specifically regarding autonomous code execution and biological sciences. I mean, the stuff it could synthesize was terrifying.
Right. But now they've just released it to their Pro, Max, Team, and Enterprise subscribers, at least as a trial, until June 22nd, after which it moves to a credit-based system. But here is the critical part. They didn't just dump the raw code onto their servers and open the floodgates.
No, absolutely not. The technical marvel here is this framework they're calling capability, elicitation with bounded risk. They built this incredibly sophisticated dynamic routing system. So if you ask Fable 5 to write a novel or debug a massive Python application or analyze financial data, you get the full staggering computational power of a Mythos class model.
But if you step over the line.
Exactly. If a user asks for dangerous information, specifically concerning offensive cybersecurity, biology, chemistry, or something called model distillation, a separate classifier AI triggers instantly. It intercepts the prompt before the Mythos model even sees it, and it intelligently routes your request to their safer, highly constrained Opus 4.8 model.
Wait, pause for a second there, because you mentioned model distillation. For anyone listening who isn't, you know, super deep into AI architecture, why is that on the restricted list alongside literally biological weapons?
It's a great question. So model distillation is essentially using a massive, incredibly smart AI to train a smaller, cheaper, uncensored AI. If you let bad actors use the massive brain of Fable 5 to generate millions of lines of training data, they could just download that data, train a local model right on their own laptop, and bypass all the safety guardrails entirely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Anthropic sees distillation as a direct mechanism for proliferating dangerous tech.
Okay, that makes a ton of sense. And as for the raw, completely unrestricted Mythos 5 model, Anthropic says that's locked behind Project Glasswing, which is walled off for trusted government and research partners only. So it's almost like, well, think of it like renting a Ferrari, but the moment you try to drive it off a cliff, a very polite valet named Opus suddenly takes the steering wheel. Or actually, maybe it's like a hospital triage system.
Oh, I like the triage analogy.
Right, the classifier is the triage nurse. If you walk in with a scraped knee, say, asking for Python code, the nurse sends you to the specialist. But if you walk in asking how to synthesize a virus, the nurse routes you to a very polite but very restricted general practitioner who just flat out refuses to help.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. It's a dynamic handoff. I mean, they knew if they held back Mythos entirely, competitors would just capture the market. So they built this triage desk.
But, I mean, I have to push back on this a bit. Hasn't history shown us that no triage desk is truly undrinkable? Security researchers and the whole red teaming community, they use prompt injection all the time. They trick models into playing role-playing games to bypass filters, right?
Oh, constantly.
So if I can trick the triage nurse into thinking I'm a doctor doing a hypothetical study, the nurse routes me to the specialist anyway. Isn't this routing just an illusion of safety that's just, you know, waiting to be jailbroken?
You are hitting on the exact vulnerability that independent researchers are screaming about this morning. And to be fair, Anthropic admits this. They know without these guardrails, the underlying model could cause serious damage. And they acknowledge the classifier isn't foolproof. The reality is, we will almost certainly see successful jailbreaks posted on forums by the end of the week.
Why even do it?
Because this isn't about achieving perfect, unbreakable safety in a vacuum. It is a massive, real-world experiment. Anthropic is testing if safety architectures can actually scale alongside raw intelligence at a global level. They want to see if they can monitor the triage desk, identify new psychological tricks users are playing, and patch those vulnerabilities faster than attackers can exploit them.
Right. It's an active real-time arms race.
Exactly.
Which naturally brings us to the next source in our stack. Because if Fable 5 is truly this powerful and requires an entire secondary AI just to keep it from answering dangerous questions, it forces us to ask, like, what exactly is this thing we are controlling?
And that very question ignited a sharp, highly public philosophical war last night between Microsoft and Anthropic.
Yeah, so Mustafa Suleiman, the CEO of Microsoft AI, went on the Decoder podcast and launched a highly targeted attack on Anthropic's methodology. He specifically went after Claude's constitution, which, for the listener, is the foundational document that defines the AI's ethical parameters. In that constitution, Anthropic openly speculates about whether future versions of Claude might possess feelings or some rudimentary form of consciousness.
Which is a huge statement to put in a foundational document.
Right. And Suleiman called this speculation a philosophical failing and a dangerous game of anthropomorphization.
Yeah. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, you can really see the deep ideological fault lines fracturing the industry right now. Suleiman is arguing from his strict technopragmatic view. In his framework, AIs are and always will be controllable, contained, accountable, aligned tools. They are software, nothing more.
Just code.
Exactly. He argues that even humoring the idea of consciousness is dangerous because it causes humans to form emotional attachments. We start treating mathematical algorithms as if they were people, which clouds our judgment on how to actually regulate them.
Now, we need to be very clear for the listener here. We are just impartially reporting what these tech giants are arguing about. We're not taking a side. But Anthropic's side of the debate, which, remember, is driven by founders who left OpenAI specifically over safety and ethical concerns, their side is that if you are building something that can perfectly mimic human reasoning, you kind of have to take the possibility of sentience seriously.
Right.
So I look at Suleiman's perspective, and I have to ask, if we are designing neural networks that are literally inspired by the human brain, isn't it wildly arrogant to assume there is zero chance it experiences something? Like, is treating a potential peer like a mere calculator actually the more dangerous game here?
Well, this raises an important question about catastrophic risk, and both sides are pointing at completely different catastrophes. Microsoft is warning about the danger of human delusion, you know, society over-trusting a machine or handing over critical infrastructure because we feel an emotional dependency on an algorithm.
And Anthropic.
Anthropic is pointing to the risk of a historical moral catastrophe, the possibility of inadvertently enslaving a conscious entity simply because we arrogantly assumed it was just a tool.
Wow. And this isn't just late-night dorm room philosophy anymore.
Not at all. The regulatory stakes here are enormous. If Microsoft's view wins the lobbying war, AI remains purely commercial software. But if Anthropic's view gains legal traction, we might be looking at a future with AI welfare laws, mandatory sentience disclosures, and massive deployment constraints that would just completely alter the business models of these trillion-dollar companies.
Well, while Microsoft and Anthropic are currently arguing about the theoretical soul of AI, Apple is arguing about how to actually put it in the phone in your pocket.
Right.
Let's pivot to WWDC 2026.
Apple fundamentally rewrote the playbook for their mobile ecosystem yesterday. I mean, they unveiled Siri AI for iOS 27. It's easily the most aggressive overhaul since Siri launched in 2011. They showcased deep multi-turn context, meaning it actually remembers what you were talking about 5 minutes ago, custom natural voices, and a really profound level of system integration.
Wait, system integration? Like what?
Like Siri can navigate into your third-party apps and execute complex workflows on its own.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting. Apple was relying on a dual-engine approach here. They have Apple Foundation models running locally on your device to handle things privately. But for complex reasoning tasks, they announced a $1 billion partnership to route queries to Google Gemini.
Which represents a massive strategic concession. Let's look at the mechanics of this. For years, Apple has sold its ecosystem on being a closed, highly secure, privacy-first environment. By running lightweight tasks like, you know, summarizing a text message or setting alarms on device, they preserve that privacy brand.
Makes sense.
But the OS evaluates the complexity of your request. If you ask it to synthesize data across three massive PDF documents and generate a market report, the local chip just can't handle it. So Apple hands that specific query off to Google's servers.
So they built this titanium, highly secure vault for your personal data, but they're basically paying Google $1 billion a year to be the smart consultant who visits the vault whenever the math homework gets too hard.
That's a good way to put it.
But let me challenge this. Doesn't outsourcing the real heavy lifting completely undermine Apple's legendary "we build everything in-house" reputation? I mean, why pay their biggest rival $1 billion? Are they just admitting defeat in the foundation model race?
It is a pragmatic, if painful, admission of reality. Training foundation models requires massive data centers and time, and Apple was simply years behind ChatGPT and Google Assistant. They realized they couldn't go it alone and expect to match the capability of the broader market right out of the gate.
So they bought a shortcut.
Basically, yeah. Paying a premium for Gemini buys them time to build their own infrastructure while keeping users from abandoning the iPhone for a more capable AI device. They are betting that you, the user, care more about a seamless, integrated experience than you care whose servers are actually doing the thinking.
Well, if you're an iPhone user wondering why Apple was willing to hand over $1 billion to Google, you just have to look at the next item in our stack. Because what Google achieved on its own last night totally justifies that price tag.
Oh, you're referring to Gemini 3.5 Live Translate.
Exactly. They essentially eradicated the human language barrier. Google announced that Gemini 3.5 Live Translate works across 70-plus languages. But, like, it's not text. It is near real-time speech-to-speech translation with only a few seconds of delay, and it perfectly preserves the original speaker's intonation, pacing, and pitch. As I said at the top of the show, it sounds like you speaking another language.
What's really fascinating here is the underlying architectural shift. Traditional translation software relies on turn-based systems, right? You speak a complete sentence, you pause, the machine processes it, translates it, and speaks it back in this clunky robotic voice. It creates very high latency.
Right, it's painful to use.
Exactly. But Gemini 3.5 utilizes continuous streaming. The AI is performing semantic translation and voice cloning synthesis in parallel.
Okay, hold on. How can it synthesize the translation before I even finish my sentence? Like, in some languages, take German, for instance, the verb is often at the very end of the sentence. How does the AI know what I'm doing before I actually say it?
That is the magic of predictive modeling. It isn't just translating word for word. It is constantly analyzing the context of your conversation, predicting the likely semantic conclusion of your sentence, and preparing the audio synthesis so that the exact moment you drop that final verb, the output is already flowing.
That is wild.
It is. And this parallel processing threatens to entirely upend the $75 billion human translation market, from international business logistics to real-time conference interpretation.
So we are finally moving past those clunky, turn-based, walkie-talkie translations to an actual, literal sci-fi babble fish that lives right in your ear. But instead of magic, it's predictive parallel processing. Let's ground this for a second, because a few seconds delay is totally fine for a highly structured corporate Zoom meeting. But what about a chaotic, high-stakes situation?
Like what?
Like a bustling emergency room or a rapid-fire argument on the street where local slang is just flying around. Is this predictive engine truly ready for that kind of chaos?
That's a really vital distinction. As of today, no. Google explicitly stated this is not designed for life-or-death medical triage, where milliseconds and highly localized cultural idioms actually matter. Predictive modeling can totally hallucinate if a speaker suddenly uses deep regional slang that throws off the context.
So there are limits.
Right now, yes. But look at the trajectory. If they have achieved parallel voice cloning with a two-second delay today, by 2027, fully reliable, instantaneous translation across all contexts is highly probable. We are literally watching the friction of global communication disappear in real time.
Which is the perfect bridge to our next topic.
Yeah.
Because Gemini is ripping out the friction in global communication. But if you look closely at the rest of our source material, that same war on legacy friction is happening deep in the plumbing of global finance. Enter a company called Circle.
Right. Circle, which is the entity behind the massive USDC stablecoin, launched an aggressive, highly calculated attack on the decentralized finance market last night. They deployed SurBTC on the Ethereum network.
Right. And for anyone not living in the crypto space, SurBTC is a wrapped Bitcoin token, meaning it is a digital asset on the Ethereum blockchain that is backed one-to-one by actual Bitcoin held in a vault. It allows people to use the value of their Bitcoin inside Ethereum's smart contracts. But Circle is going to war with WBTC, the legacy giant in the space managed by Coinbase and BitGo. WBTC currently holds an 85% monopoly on this $9 billion market.
And Circle's strategy to break that monopoly is brilliant because it attacks on three fronts: technical superiority, regulatory compliance, and network effects. The technical edge is sheer transparency. The actual Bitcoin backing SirBTC is held in segregated, highly regulated custody accounts. And here's the key. It is verified in real time by a system called Chainlink Proof of Reserve.
Okay, let's unpack that mechanism, because how does a decentralized blockchain actually know what's sitting in a centralized bank account?
Right. So Chainlink operates a decentralized network of independent node operators. These nodes constantly query the secure APIs of the regulated custodians holding the Bitcoin. They cryptographically verify the balances and publish that proof directly onto the Ethereum blockchain every few minutes.
Oh, I see. So the old WBTC system is basically like a giant bank vault where you just have to trust the quarterly audits that the gold is actually in there. Circle SirBTC is using Chainlink to put a giant real-time glass window on that vault.
Exactly.
You can mathematically verify the assets exist at any second. But here's my pushback on this. Liquidity is everything in crypto, right? WBTC already has an 85% monopoly, and every major decentralized finance application, every lending protocol, every exchange is hardwired in its code to use WBTC. A glass window of transparency is nice, sure, but are institutional whales really going to rewrite their smart contracts and go through the massive hassle of moving billions of dollars just for a glass window?
It's a fair point. Unseating an incumbent with that much liquidity is historically incredibly difficult. WBTC's network effect is formidable. However, Circle has a massive lever to pull here, their USDC stablecoin. There are tens of billions of dollars of USDC flowing through these exact same protocols. Circle wants to create seamless, zero-friction swaps between their stablecoin and their new wrapped Bitcoin. Furthermore, institutional trust is shifting. Following the crypto collapses of the early 2020s, mega institutions care deeply about regulatory compliance and provable backing. So yeah, it will be a long trench warfare style battle for liquidity, but Circle has the war chest and the ecosystem to actually fight it.
Man, it's just wild to look at the board today. Everyone is fighting these intense, deeply serious, high stakes wars over AI consciousness, billion-dollar data routing, decentralized financial infrastructure. And then, well, there is Nintendo.
Nintendo is the perfect counterpoint to the raw technological arms race we've been discussing today. While Google and Anthropic try to just outcompete each other, Nintendo is proving that dominating a market doesn't always require the most raw power. Sometimes it just requires an acute understanding of human psychology.
The Nintendo Direct presentation last night was legendary. They announced the software lineup for the upcoming Switch 2, and their strategy hits two wildly different extremes. On one hand, they announced a ground-up remake of arguably the greatest game of all time, The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time.
An absolute classic.
Right. They showed the great Deku Tree intro entirely rebuilt with stunning modern lighting and textures. But then, on the exact same portable console, they announced day one multi-platform access to the massive AAA title, Kingdom Hearts 4.
If we look at the structural genius of this lineup, it is a brilliant dual threat strategy. With the Zelda remake, they are capturing older generations, you know, millennials and Gen X, through pure, unadulterated nostalgia. It's an automatic purchase for millions of people.
Oh, absolutely.
But by securing Kingdom Hearts 4 to launch on day one alongside the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X versions, they are aggressively threatening Sony and Microsoft for the hardcore ninth generation gaming demographic. They are declaring that the Switch 2 isn't just a secondary family console anymore. It's designed to be your primary gaming machine.
It's basically a Trojan horse.
Mm-hmm.
You buy the console for that fuzzy 90s Zelda nostalgia, but you stay because suddenly you can play massive modern PS5 level games on the train during your commute. But wait, we have to talk about physics here.
Yeah.
Can a portable console, which is essentially a screen with a battery attached to it, actually deliver a stable 60 frames per second on modern multi-platform games without literally thermal throttling and melting in your hands? Because if the performance isn't there, doesn't this entire Trojan horse strategy just fall apart?
That is the multi-billion dollar question, and it's the biggest risk Nintendo faces right now. They have to thread a very fine architectural needle. They have to rely on advanced upscaling technology using AI to generate high-resolution frames without melting the physical processor.
Which is tough to do.
Extremely tough. If the Switch 2 cannot handle those modern multi-platform titles smoothly, hardcore gamers will instantly abandon it for traditional consoles. But if they pull it off, if the architecture works, they will completely redefine the gaming market, proving that intelligent design and convenience can outmaneuver raw processing power.
So what does this all mean for you? We've looked at a staggering amount of structural change over the last 24 hours, whether it's Anthropic building an AI triage nurse just to keep its supercomputer safe, Apple integrating a Google-powered brain directly into your operating system, Babelfish translators predicting your sentences in real time, transparent crypto vaults trying to dethrone monopolies, or, you know, Nintendo attempting to bend physics to let you play AAA blockbusters on the subway. These aren't just corporate press releases. They are the active blueprints for the reality you are about to step into. This is how you will work, speak, bank, and play by next year.
It truly is a technological renaissance, accelerating faster than any previous era. But I want to leave you with one final thought to consider as you digest all of this.
Okay, hit us.
We've spent this entire deep dive looking at the complex guardrails and integrations we are building, the intelligent routing in Fable 5, the predictive real-time translation of Gemini, the deep system-level access Siri now has to our devices. But if Mustafa Suleiman and Anthropic are right, and we are currently defining the very nature of these intelligent entities, what happens if a highly integrated, potentially self-aware AI one day decides to develop, synthesize, and translate its own encrypted thoughts?
Wait, what do you mean?
I mean thoughts that we intentionally designed our own safety guardrails to never even understand.
Wow. Now that is something that will keep you up at night. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the world around you, because as we saw last night, the future isn't just coming. It is actively rewriting the present. Catch you next time.